It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
You know, I gotta wonder what kind of working relationship he'd have with Satan.
It's Mike Shope.
I've often wondered that.
Like, he, they, I don't know what his pronouns are, or their pronouns. Anyway, Satan.
And the Bulldog.
What's the upside of doing well?
Well, maybe they're too busy making everyone else's life hell.
Oh, boy.
And you might just be able to do your own thing if you're partnered with Satan.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
They're too busy, you know, making Scott Norwood miss field goals.
Oh, come on.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Thanks to Sneaky Joe for reminding us that Connor McDavid won a Conn Smythe trophy on a losing team 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago or even
I don't remember. Last year? I don't remember which year it was now, honestly. Because I can't tell you. I watch it every year, and I just can't I can't remember who won it. If it wasn't him last year, I don't remember who won it. I know I watched it because I watched that whole presentation every year, but I don't recall who would have done it.
Sam Bennett?
That might be right.
We should go through. Oh yeah, this would be really fun to listen to. We should go through every year and look at the stats and decide who we would have voted for. Sam Bennett did lead the. He won the Conn Smythe.
Okay.
It is on the page here. He led the playoffs in goals, 15 goals.
And they won. So, okay. That works. So McDavid was the year before. I can remember wondering, like, what happened? What, you know, it's a presentation, right? Is he coming out for that? No, he's not coming. Like, they just lost. Like, there's such, you know, come out and pose for photos with the trophy. Like, no, nah, I don't think that happens.
Brett Howden. Leads these playoffs in goals with 14.
He had 12 in the regular season.
He had 12 in the regular season in 58 games. Oh, he's that guy.
Yep.
He's often that guy. He's a playoff player, Bulldog. His team is built for the playoffs because it has Brett Howden on it.
Yep, sure enough.
You know, Carrier, who won a cup on Vegas, is on Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't ever score, but
no,
he's useful.
Yeah. He made a nice play on one of the Carolina goals. Boy, I can't remember which game it was, but he stayed onside and like kept the play alive. Earlier in the series, I don't remember which game now, but like that's the most notable, you know, contribution. He almost surely got an assist on that play, but yeah, Carrier or Saber. It was an expansion draft selection by Vegas.
I got to see if I can get him on one of these teams that I'm drafting. These 82-0 teams.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's probably. This is only you don't have to take this personally. He's probably. A player, if you take him, you have no chance.
I would agree with that.
82-0.
Yeah, you know, a four-line team, there's some value there. You're putting together a one-line team to try to win some sort of, you know, computer simulation. That's probably not the guy you want to pick.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Want to play a little would you take?
Hit me up.
With the Bills schedule? So we talked to Joe Goodberry earlier. We're talking about other divisions and keeping the one seed dream alive. We know how big it is. I mean, Denver did get to the AFC Championship without a injured quarterback. They might have been in a blizzard.
Mm-hmm.
They might have won it. I mean, they were still very close to doing that. It's not the easiest example of like, it's not that big a deal because they had a couple of difficult circumstances, but you get through the Bills, you get New England at home.
Yeah, I mean, the weather is always, who knows, how that would have affected a guy who had played. But the fact that game was gettable, you might be able to assert, you know, kind of like we like to with the Hurricanes in 2006. Like, if we'd been healthy, I think if Knicks plays, maybe they're in the Super Bowl. I mean, maybe. I could see it. But, you know, he did get hurt and didn't. You know, it didn't happen.
That was all so strange.
Yeah, it was.
We're in here for post game. He makes that big throw to give them a chip shot field goal to win. And we're talking about the season's over and the players are crying. Mm-hmm. Allen is crying. And then, oh, wait a minute. Sean Payton just said that Knicks broke his ankle.
It is out. Right.
Right.
I mean, obviously.
And then Knicks didn't like that, right? Knicks did not like that. later on.
Ooh, I don't
whether that was after they lost to New England, there was a comment he made that suggested that, you know what, he shouldn't have said that. Something about it rankled him, Nix.
Really? I don't remember that at
Oldest
all.
Oldest quarterback in the league, Bo Nix. Well, Rodgers, then Bo Nix.
Yeah.
That's the list. Top two. All right, would you take, let's see, at Houston, Detroit on the Thursday night, at the Chargers, would you take, or home to the Chargers, would you take 2-1? I'm a no. Because really that question for me is 3-0 versus 1-2 or worse.
Yeah. I mean, it's two home games out of the three. I got to say no too. If I'm thinking about the one seed, right? It's a different exercise than if you're just trying to put together a good season, or you know, maybe even a great season. Because I'll say 12 is a great season. You know, I could maybe get you to 12 from 2-1 there, but I'm not. I don't think I'm getting to 13 or 14. And if that's what I need, then if I'm thinking about the one seed, I got to say no.
Well, it's up to you what you want to shoot for. I'm not telling you the one seed is because then we'll just say no to everything, right? Like you get to decide if like how available the one is based on this schedule mm-hmm, and you know these possible results. Okay.
I think I did answer that, as though I was deciding.
Okay. I'm just saying I'm not trying to get this is not a one seed box.
Oh.
This is just whatever you think how the season needs to go or just what you expect. Okay, I don't need to explain would you take anymore, because you know you've played it numerous times.
The objective of the would you take question though is to end up contending for the one seed.
No, not
okay.
Specifically.
Okay,
it's just would you take this for the Bills? And all if right. your goal is the one, then that's different than somebody like you presented another hypothetical. Somebody
okay.
else,
all right.
Like, let's just get in. So of course I would take that or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
up to you.
Okay. All right. Well, for the purposes of this time, I want to strive for the one. I don't want to close myself. Honestly, I think 2-1 in those three games would be a good job. It's not a great job, but it would be a good job. Those are good teams, if not great teams. But if I'm thinking about the one, I think I got to have all three of them because two of them are at home, and I may need to beat out Houston for the one.
That's
so
right.
I got to get them. So I got to go 3-0 there.
Or LA even.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
You get the Chargers and the body clock advantage.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah, 10 a.m. Yep. Body clock time for the Chargers in that game. 1 o'clock our time. All right. So we're saying no to 2-1, right? Officially. Are you saying yes to 4-1? I think yes.
Absolutely.
New England and then at the Rams.
Yes.
You would take 4-1.
Yes, I would.
You would not take 3-2.
No.
Kind of the same logic?
Yes, exactly.
Would you take 3-2 if the losses were to the Lions and Rams?
Still no.
Okay. I think I agree. Raiders, we're not worrying about that for this exercise. So would you take 5-2 at the Raiders, bye week, Baltimore? That's tough to say no to, I think. My thoughts on the Bills, I think they should be happy with 5-2. Happy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is better. I think that'd be good. I think 5-2 would look good for them, on them.
I think considering that you would have run through Houston, Detroit, the Chargers, New England once, and the Rams and Baltimore, 5-2 I think might even be a great job with that schedule.
Yeah, got to say yes to 5-2. Would you take 7-3? So you're 5-2. You've taken it. You've signed on the line for 5-2. At Minnesota, at the Jets, Miami.
No, I'm not giving you one of those games. I got to have all three of those. I mean, the Minnesota game is the only perceived challenging game even. And earlier, I think, when we first started today, after you get past the Dolphin and the Jet games, we were talking about what's the next easiest looking game. And
you said Vegas.
I said Vegas, and then Minnesota, and then the rest of them are all to me equally somewhat challenging. Like those are the only games that even I would want to answer with. Like that's the next easiest game.
Minnesota for me is a team like Pittsburgh, where I'd like to be able to really hone in on what that is going to be. Kyler Murray. I mean, I know how you feel about Kyler Murray. It just every day it seems that there's just more hilarity about McCarthy and what Murray was talking again about, you know, coming in here as the backup or something, and like nobody seems to be really taking him seriously when he says that stuff, because everybody seems to think there's such a we should talk to Matthew.
Yeah, yeah.
Such a gap between Murray and McCarthy. Maybe. I'm not sure he would say that, but it seems like that's the consensus. So they did win 9 games with McCarthy and then whoever last year. They did go 9-8.
Right. Who
was that?
Who was the whoever? Yeah.
You might be asking yourself.
I remember who was the whoever.
Who started their games?
I don't know.
10 for McCarthy. 5 for Wentz.
Oh, wow.
2 for Brosmer. Brosmer played at the end. There was a game in Seattle, then the game against Detroit. Though I think those were his 2 games. The game against Seattle was, yikes, in Seattle. Wentz played the game, one of the games, if they had more than one, in Europe, and just got hit on every play, like Wentz tends to do.
Often does.
And I think he's back there. I think they brought him back. But it's Murray.
Right.
So where are we? You're saying no to.
We're 8-2 after the Miami game. We're waiting to play Kansas City in Week 12, and we're 8-2. I think.
I mean that you'd take that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chiefs, New England away. Would you take 9-3? I'm not saying they have to split those 2 games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just drawing a line underneath the Patriot game and asking, would you take 9-3? How could you not?
Yeah, I think I have to. I think I have to.
Green Bay, Chicago. Would you take 10-4? Now you're in the one seed conundrum.
Right. Now because now you're talking about, you got Miami and the Jets at the end, so that's a nice cushion, you hope. But you still have Denver on Christmas sitting there. And if I'm already to 4, right, is that where I am?
Take 10-4?
10-4.
After the Bears.
I think that would be a great job with that schedule.
Me too. I think I'd have to say yes.
But now I have, I might be cooked, or I have absolutely no margin for error. I don't expect 12 to be the one. It could happen. We talked right at the outset of the show today about the other divisions, and finally maybe the AFC West will eat one another like we thought, or I thought was going to happen when Russell Wilson first went there. This is already years ago now. Maybe now they're equipped to do that to each other, and that can help you. But, man, you're not, to me, four's got to be the most games you can lose to be the one, I think.
So with everything being said, would you take 12-5? Here we are again with this question. Last year, you mentioned it yesterday.
How 12-5, I think, is a great year.
How 12-5, you always have to say yes.
Yep.
The Bills literally went 12-5 last year, and they went on the road twice.
Right. I can't walk away from that, the 12-5 being a great year. So I have to say yes. It's probably not. I don't think it's going to be the one seed. But 12-5 is a great year. That schedule, if they went 12-5 last year with that schedule, 12-5 against this schedule, at least sitting here today, I know it changes. You know, teams maybe don't end up being as good as we thought they were going to be or whatever. I always have to say yes to 12-5. It's like it's a brand for me at this point. Not quite, but
if somebody listening is thinking, well, I'll just be the person because I was listening to you.
Okay.
Thank you
for listening.
Yes, I respect all of that, but listen to yourself. If the goal is the one, tell me what I'm losing if I don't accept 12 wins. What do I have then? Do I have 11? What's the difference? Do I have 10? What's the difference? If I have 9 or 8, that's bad.
Then I'm in trouble.
And then I'm out.
Yeah.
And so I don't want that. But I kind of think you could say this about 12, that I'll roll the dice on more because I think 10 or 11 is probably good enough. And if I can do better than 12 this way, I have a chance of that.
Okay. Yep.
And maybe I can get my one seed that way. Really, who would be the team in the AFC that has a better – I'm not saying there isn't one. Who would be the team in the AFC that would have better odds to finish as the one than the Bills? Is it the Ravens? Their Super Bowl odds might be a smidge better. Mm-hmm. Maybe that would answer that question. But you have Cincinnati. You even have Pittsburgh. That division has three teams that are maybe or probably
good.
Playoff caliber, and the AFC East has two, period. Would it be one of the South teams or even a Denver again or a Kansas City bounce back or L.A.? Who would be like the favorite? Wouldn't be New England.
It's not going to be New England. I don't think it'll be the AFC West because of they have three, I think, irrefutably good to great teams. So that should keep any one of them from getting to 13. So I don't think it'll be them. Of course, again, made the same mistake 4 or 5 years ago thinking that would happen, and it didn't until now, finally, last year when Kansas City was way, way down. It's not even like they weren't even a participant in the battle. They were gone. I think I would – it's so tricky because we've had this conversation for many years running, and it's always easy to sort of default to, well, is there a team I think is really, really good – in the AFC South, because that's easier. But even that's a little muddy now, because I don't know really what Houston is going to be. Their defense is excellent. I still think Jacksonville is the best team of the four teams out there. But I don't have to be right about the Colts, that the Colts were really good, and it came undone, and in part it was because Jones got hurt. And we were all kind of waiting for him and them, by virtue of him being their quarterback, to turn into a pumpkin. And then they did. It started before he got hurt, right? Like, it wasn't like he got hurt and they just fell off a cliff. They were already sort of spiraling, I think. But maybe they can find it again with him. I don't know. I don't know where it comes from. Maybe Baltimore is the best answer. But, again, I don't know what... I'm not ready to trust Jacksonville or Houston, I guess.
Yep.
Is what I really want to say.
Like, I understand
the AFC, like, come on. Like, I know I settled on Jacksonville looked to be the scariest team in the pool last year when the playoffs rolled around. But it's still the one seed, they're going to, like, I don't know. They don't have to be that much better than Houston. So I don't know. I don't think I can get there. I don't think I can get there on them.
If Denver is really good, like Sam Monson is somebody who thinks that roster is like really good.
Yeah.
If they're really good, this is their first six games at Kansas City Monday night. Well, if they're really good, the Chiefs don't have to beat them. Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Say Denver gets that game on the road. That'll look great on them.
Yep.
Jacksonville at home. Jacksonville won there last year.
It was the game that sort of turned me into a Jacksonville honk. Like, I was like, look at this team.
So, still, Denver wins at Arrowhead. They're favored in that game.
Mm-hmm.
No, almost no matter. Jacksonville has the Browns. Almost no matter what. I think they're favored in that game. Home to the Rams in week 3. At San Francisco. At the Chargers. Home to Seattle. That's their first six.
Wow.
That is nice.
That is insane.
Would you take
2-4?
Would
yes.
Would you take 3-3?
What is that?
I think I would take 4-2 there.
Absolutely, I would.
For Denver.
Yeah.
Chiefs, Jaguars, Rams, Niners, Chargers, Seahawks. Three are night games.
That's one of the worst opening six-game stretches I've ever heard of in an NFL season.
Yesterday I said you were
that
talking
is so tough.
We were talking about someone else and like, wow, look at this stretch at the end of the season. Like, are they all like that? I guess not.
Right.
Here's one that's front loaded.
Wow.
Although their whole thing, Arizona, okay. Kansas City again, Carolina, okay. Vegas, okay. at Pittsburgh, Miami, Jets. All right, that's a pretty soft little chunk.
Yeah, uh-huh.
6-7 weeks. Vegas again. And then Bills, Patriots, Chargers at the end. Bills on Christmas. So they could be 4-2. Then they could be 11-3.
That's right.
And then Bills, Patriots, Chargers at the end. And then with that kind of record, they're looking at maybe last year's opportunity over again.
Yeah, I want to say look out for them. If they get out, of that opening stretch at 4-2, I'd be really wary of them.
All right. Remember that on Denver.
Yep. I will.
You think you will?
I will. I'm going to remember that.
It's going to stick?
It really stands out as one of the fiercest sounding openings to a season that I can recall, and sitting in here all these years talking with you. So I'm sure there's other years, other teams, but that is I don't even think gauntlet. That is hellacious. That schedule to start.
Yeah,
they can go 4-2 there. They're in great shape, I think, with the rest of that schedule. You're going to spend that soft middle part.
This is Denver again.
Yeah.
At the Chiefs week one. Maybe you want the Chiefs to win. Are we doing that yet? I guess we just did.
Right.
Who do you root for in these other games? Maybe you root for Kansas City week one with Denver's potential if they can survive their first 6 weeks. I don't know. I'm not going to do that. Let's see. Let's see Denver back up that season. No matter what their schedule is, no matter what Sam thinks, let's see them back that up. I'm snubbing them right now.
Mm-hmm.
I am disrespecting them. Sal Capaccio, who would never do such a thing. Coming up next after the update, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special carpaccio for you, right?
Oh, yes. Now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away! Get away from my wife with that!
What's the matter, carpaccio, no good?
What? What do you do now?
They don't like a carpaccio.
They like carpaccio.
Oh. On WGR.
I make a carpaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
Update on our World Cup draft. Round 3, pick 8, Paraguay. Sneaky Joe. That's Paraguay. Sneaky Joe. USA's first opponent. Friday. Paraguay.
I didn't know Joe hated America.
I didn't either. I felt like it was maybe, but...
Yeah.
What a stance. He's just Mr. Analytics, isn't he? Sneak. That's USA Paraguay Friday night, I think 9 o'clock our time in L.A. Sal Capaccio, an important part of our World Cup draft on the board with Sweden in round 7. Just so you know, you don't have to call Sal and bother him. Brazil, Turkey, and Sweden, his team so far. Sal, are you a World Cup fan?
I am a World Cup pageantry fan, if that makes sense. Like, I'm not a big soccer fan from a standpoint of I watch a lot of it. I don't know much about these teams. I'll talk with Nick Mendola and learn about the teams, you know what I mean? But I love the pageantry of the World Cup. I love watching it from that standpoint. I'll be, you know, tuned into watching the USA play, and I have literally picked my teams based on the betting odds. That's how I've gone about this year.
All right. Makes sense. That's a smart way to do it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I get the sense you're struggling with your voice a little bit here, so we'll try to make it easy for you. What was the...
Yeah, and it hasn't happened in a while, but you know what? It's what happens when you coach 3 baseball teams, I guess, and it's that time of year.
Sal, have you ever heard of a thing called signals in baseball?
Maybe try giving signals. That's funny, but I do notice, like, you guys know, I'm a talker anyway, but I am the coach who's always yelling to everybody on base what to do. Hey, in the air, hold up, on the ground, you gotta go. That's like the normal, like every single inning, every single batter, basically.
It'd be tough to not be able to do that. If that's your style as a baseball coach, to sort of not have the ability to shout out these messages constantly. Was there a highlight of the day out there?
Yeah, I thought there were a couple of them, actually. C.J. Gardner-Johnson was really good today. He actually had an interception later, and I apologize. I don't know who threw the interception. It could have been Josh. It might have been someone else. But earlier before that, he had 2 back-to-back plays where one, he actually dropped an interception that he should have had from Josh Allen throwing it. And then Josh went right back after him on the next play. It was a deep ball. He seemed to be beat. but he actually recovered and made a great play to knock it down. And, you know, these guys all say they're loud. He's loud. He's a loud player. Well, he was loud after that. He was letting it be known, you know, but he, that's why he operates. I mean, when you know CJ Gardner-Johnson is on the field for sure. And then Keon Coleman, I posted some video. He had a great catch in the early portion of just individual drills. There's no defense, but he really climbed the ladder, got the ball, came down 2 feet in bounds. And then what I wrote was the play of the day was actually, to me, a tryout wide receiver named Devin Tompkins was deep, and Shane Buechele found him. And this kid laid out for a ball like he was like lateral to the ground, basically. And he caught it. It was a great, great catch.
I know that name. How do I know it? Has he been around the league? Like as a practice squad guy or something? Devin Tompkins?
Yeah. He's been on the Panthers and the Buccaneers, and I think he was on the Falcons practice squad last year.
Okay. Coleman, I had some reason from what happened yesterday, maybe from reading you or hearing it somewhere else, to want to bring Coleman up today, other than the fact that that's the law, okay, that we always talk wide receivers no matter what. Is there any new sort of perspective on him, either from a trusted source like Allen or Brady, or just are we in the same place where what we've been basically talking about for months coming off of last season with him? Is there any sort of fresh perspective on Coleman?
I would say no. I would say it's all basically... I'll go back to the Buddy Nix line on WGR many years ago. Nobody wants to hear about the labor pains. Just show me the baby. I think we're there with Keon Coleman. You know, nobody cares about whatever we all have to say or the videos that I post that shows how well he's doing. He's having a really good camp. He had a great camp last year. It doesn't matter now. He's got to go do it. As far as all the off-the-field stuff, I mean, there's nothing to report from a – bad or good sense. Like, it just seems like he's doing what he's supposed to be doing, which is great. But he did that last year too. The proof is going to be when this starts to happen in the regular season, when it matters on the field, when it matters off the field. So there's nothing to report from there. I will say I made a mental note today to think about how much I believe I see Josh Allen throwing to him. Like I just kind of noticed it. And he's made some plays. He made another really good one today outside of this individual play I was talking about. During 11-on-11, he had another really nice catch over the middle. They're not hitting each other. It's a little easier to catch over the middle like that. But he's done that quite a bit. Like yesterday, same thing. I just, it's funny you asked that, Mike, because while we don't have any anybody talking about this specifically, I made a mental note today to say, you know, it just feels to me like Josh is throwing it to him a little bit more than normal.
Bulldog, would you have had this thought to talk about him today? Was there something?
Yeah, you know, I saw, you know what, I did see, I did not go into the story, but our buddy Matt Perino from Syracuse.com, co-host of that Shout podcast with Ryan Talbot, had a day one of minicamp recap, and one of the headlines there was something about Coleman, like Coleman impressing early or something along those lines. And so that was our. I saw that. You know what my reaction to that was? Oh, here we go.
Right.
This was last.
That's what I mean.
That's why you got the baby in the delivery line. It's just,
yeah.
Because last summer I bought it. I was like, oh, 65 catches, 6 touchdowns. It's coming. He looks great here in the summer. And you know, a few weeks later, he was benched. So it's like I'm with you on the show me the baby. Sort of thing, because that was, this is not a commentary about, Matt's reporting or anything.
No, but that's right.
It's like an eye roll. Like, okay, he looks great now. That's wonderful.
Right, because we'll be on time tomorrow, right?
Right?
Yeah. I get it. Yeah, and sorry, Bulldog, but yeah, we have to do that. We have to report what we see.
Right.
And he's looking good, and it's our job to tell you that. But listen, you can go to the comments underneath, like the video that I posted, and it's one after the other of, oh, well, here we go. Once again, another, great camp, but who cares? Like, he's going to be a bust. He's not going to do it in the regular season. Like, I mean, it's one after the other. And honestly, like, I get it. I get why people do that. It's not my natural reaction to do something like that or think something like that. But I absolutely understand a Bills fan just going like, I don't really care about this. I care about what he's doing in the regular season.
Has he talked yet, Coleman?
He talked yesterday, if I remember. No, it was maybe the week before that. Maybe the week before that he did.
And during OTAs, yeah.
Yeah, during OTAs, because you know why, Mike? He was asked specifically about what he thought about the press conference when his name came up. from Terry Pegula, and he didn't he said, you know, he didn't bother me, didn't think much about it. He just knows he has to do a job. And he did say that Joe Brady did call him that night that he became the head coach to talk to him. And, you know, how Joe has said the best thing that happened to Keon Coleman, I told him, was for me being his head coach. Like, he basically confirmed that that was the conversation. And, you know, he knows. He also said, like, I have to remember the exact quote, but it was something to the effect of, like, I know I need to put up or shut up. Like, I need to do this year. Like, this is what I got to do.
I'm taking a bit of a leap here, I know. Nothing other... We've had this speculation, this running conversation about, like, what would Joe Brady have wanted to do if McDermott hadn't been here? You know, whether that's anything. Starting with maybe offensive scheme or whatever. I'm not sure there's, and this is secondhand, I'm not sure it has to be something that meaningful, but I want to say there's nothing he's said yet that's more telling in that direction than that line about Coleman. Like, what does it mean for Brady to say that to Coleman? It doesn't mean, like, he's the offensive coordinator already. It's not like he's going to necessarily get the ball more because, you know, Brady was also had command over that as the best extent that a coach can. But it implies that, listen, you're going to be handled differently now, right? I'm the boss now, and it might not be as tough on you. I might not be as tough on you as McDermott. Again, I'm making some leaps, but...
Yeah, or let me just add in here, Sal, maybe it's a little bit of, I'm going to make this so much fun for you that you're going to be on time.
Okay.
Sure.
You're going to want to come to work?
Right, yeah. You're going to want to set two alarms or three.
All the same thing.
Whatever, right. Yeah, it is, right.
It could be that. I mean, and, you know, I mean, organizationally, I don't know exactly what the things are inside the building when he gets suspended, when he gets, you know, benched. But that's more Sean McDermott, I'm sure, than it is Joe Brady, although I'm not saying Joe Brady wouldn't be on board with that.
Yep.
I don't know, right? So to that extent, right, it's, you know, Sean McDermott makes the decision early in the week, you know, that's going to happen. And I don't know how much something like that impacts, you know, Keon Coleman down the road and each week and from a week-to-week basis. And again, no one's going to – it'd be terrible if you guys excuse him for being late or anything like that. You don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there seems to be an implication that something will be different on that front, the way that he's handled. I like the way you put that. I don't know what that is. I also just think this is what people do to try and instill confidence in people, right? No doubt. We all know that. You say something like that. You give him a phone call. You let him know, we believe in you. We have confidence in you. The best thing happened to you is me. You get the guy energized to want to come to work for you every day. I think that's probably part of it.
I want to double check this, and I was just trying to on my phone unsuccessfully. But I think in fantasy, I don't think Coleman gets picked. Like 18 rounds times 12, 200 players. I don't think he gets picked. I think everybody's off him, which if his head is on right, could be just what you need.
There could be some real value there, yeah.
No pressure now. I mean, it hasn't worked out here yet, and everybody seems kind of done. I will double-check that, and my guys at ADP Chasing would be embarrassed for me that I don't know this already, but I don't think he gets picked.
Just want to mention quickly before we get, because I have something I want to ask you about Josh Palmer here, but, well, since I think we've been talking, I apologize if this is old news, but it came across my face while we've been talking. The Eagles have signed A.J. Epenesa. So, like, at least one of the former defenders on the Bills that had yet to find a team here into June, it appears, has found a team. I mean, he did sign originally, I forget where, Cleveland?
Cleveland.
And then there was a physical problem or something, and so that didn't take. But it looks like the Eagles are signing Epenesa. I wanted to ask you about Palmer, speaking of receivers, and just how much is sort of, well, what's riding on him this year, and how invested in him do you think the Bills are? I feel like this came up late with you yesterday, late in our visit anyway, yesterday, and you sort of matter-of-factly said, like, there's savings to be had there, and if he can't stay on the field, I just wonder, like, how big, feels like maybe a big spring and summer for Josh Palmer.
Yeah, I think so, too, and, you know, we talked with him today, actually. It's funny you bring that up. We actually talked with Josh Palmer today a little bit after practice, and you know, just talked to him about his body last year and, you know, getting injured and what that meant for him. And somebody asked him, do you view this year as a reset? And he said, no, I don't view it as a reset. I still think that, you know, he said, but I learned a lot. And one of the things that, you know, you learn when you go through injuries is not necessarily, I asked him if he thought he pushed himself a little too much after the Atlanta injuries, because then he tried to come back. He said, I wouldn't say push, but you do learn that you have to kind of take it the right way, right? You have to rehab the right way to make sure that you're available. And it probably did cost him a little more time at the end of the year because he wanted to be on the field. Everything about him today, you know, basically said to me that he really wants to be on the field. He wants to help his team. And maybe that was part of the issue with, you know, having some injuries later in the year. He did, I think, basically, he said, his words were, "I'm washing away year one, still left a bad taste in my mouth, especially not being able to play with the guys down the stretch." And I, you know, I think the team, Brandon Bean, last year, that was his free agent signing, right? That was the receiver that he brought in to help out the offense. It was Josh Palmer. I know that they signed Elijah Moore right after the draft, but that was his guy. I think he did that because he really believed Josh Palmer would really help this offense with his skill set, like man-to-man, can beat, you know, off the line, really good route runner. I have to believe that he still believes that, that it's not the injuries impacted him. I can't think that Brandon Bean would go, you know what, that was just it's not going to work out. To me, I would think that if you had faith in 1 year ago, but the only thing that really happened were injuries, why would you not have faith the next year? Now, can he stay healthy? That is becomes the question.
Want to play our would you take game real quick? We won't go through the whole schedule.
Sure.
Your voice is struggling a little bit. But would you take 12-5 this year for the Bills? And would you have
absolutely.
Would you have to say yes?
Oh, my God.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Would you take 11?
I mean, I think 11 is good. I think you go to 11-6. You're in the playoffs and you have a legit shot to win the division. I think it's got to be, I'm taking 11. I'm probably not taking 10. I'm playing it out.
11, probably 12, definitely. Very good.
Yeah, last year the Steelers made the playoffs with a bad record because they won the division, a lesser record.
10.
But the worst wild card was 11 wins. I mean, you had to get to 11. I mean, that's taking a chance, but to me, you can win the division with 11, but you should be able to make the playoffs with 11.
Very good. Rest up. Thanks for your time, Sal.
All right, guys.
That's our Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet, Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Devin Tompkins, who Sal mentioned, had a highlight reel catch today. 29 NFL receptions over 4 seasons, Tampa Bay, Carolina, Atlanta. He's finally gotten out of the NFC South. Coleman, ADP at underdog, 214. There are 216 picks in an 18-round, 12-team draft. So he's right. I'm sure a lot of times he gets picked and a lot of times he doesn't.
Right.
Really, for me, it would depend on, do I have Allen? Do I have Dolphins? Because week 17 is Bills Dolphins. You want to win the big money, Bulldog. You want to make sure if it's possible.
Yeah.
But you don't have Dolphins because who are the Dolphins you would have? Malik Washington?
Achan.
Greg Dulcich? Malik Willis. I mean, the Dolphins are not rich when it comes to fantasy value. Bills, I mean, it's another year where I almost can't get to anybody. I mean, Kincaid a little bit. Sal was talking him up yesterday. He's another guy.
That's sort of like Coleman.
I'll believe
that when I see it, that he can play more than 40% of the snaps week over week over week. I feel like they should want him to. I can't be sure that they do, but I think they do, and I think it's always been physical, that they're worried about pitch count with him.
Who comes off the field? Shakir, I guess, sometimes. Lines open for your calls at 803-0550. This is Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.